And we are back once again, the 239th installment, if you can believe that, of the Parish of the Patriots. I'm glad you joined us this week, whether you're a return listener or maybe you're just checking the show out for the first time. I'm glad you're here. We do have a Christian-specific segment that's roughly the halfway point of the show, very roughly, but roughly in there. Encourage you to tune in for that if you're new around here. We'll get it out of the way early. I don't spend a lot of time dunning y'all for money. I know y'all listen probably to a lot of different shows, and everybody asks for your financial support. I pass the plate around. If you get something out of it, drop something in the plate. It means a lot to me. I do appreciate it. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. If you do want to be a part of that, if you get something out of the show, just go to the description page for this show right here, Radio Albion. I got snail mail, Bitcoin, Monero, email address to drop your notes. If you have a different cryptocurrency, drop me a note for that. I can get you an address for that as well. I'll take your shit coins. I'm not too proud. Let's get to the listener supporter mailbag this week. I kind of have a fried brain this morning. I don't know what's going on with me. I don't know. I'm just having a hard time this morning, but we're going to struggle through. GPD dough for the show from Mr. T. Thank you, Mr. T. And the dough for the show. Need all the dough for the show I can get. Dear GPD, sorry it's been a long time between show dough. I hope all is well with you and yours. I can't even imagine how much work you're putting in, keeping RA up and running while putting food on the table. And that's from Jackie, and I do appreciate it. And yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I'm looking forward to the day. My friend is just back with us. I miss Finn a lot. Not just because he would be doing all this and it would be better than what I'm trying to keep cobbled together. I really miss sitting and visiting with him. I drop emails with him and I email him at least once or twice a week. I try to email, and the response thing is fairly short, and he's having to use his touchpad and it does all this misspellings and stuff, and it is what it is. But I miss visiting with my friend. I really do. I miss the conversations we had. We always did the Friday Daily Nationalist together, and as y'all know, I mean, the Daily Nationalist is like a 30-minute show, and we'd wind up, I'd look at the timer on my computer and like, we'd be like 2 hours. He'd finally be like, well, I've got to go because I got to get this ready to go up. And, you know, we'd have that 2 hours. We'd just be visiting. You know, I really miss visiting with my friend. And I look forward to the day. I really look forward to the day he's back. It's just, I can't, you know, it's just, it's like there's just this missing element here that, you know, there's just no way to replace it. So yeah, we're all looking forward to that. That got us through the listener supporter mailbag this week. So thank you all very much. And again, if you get something out of the show, please drop something in there. And again, I gotta tell y'all, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if I got too many things going on in my mind or whatever. It's like having a hard time. No time this week, but I do always look forward to it. So, you know, if you listen, it's like this show, I don't know, this show, you seem a little off your game this week. It's not out of lack of enthusiasm or I don't feel like doing it. It's not the case at all. It's just, I'm on episode number 239. You know, we got to, and 239 episodes are trying to keep it fresh. When Sven was here, sometimes I'd take like a week off. I'd be like, you know, they're going to be the show this week, Sven. And he'd have something else to put in that time slot. And you know, I just get fresh and I can't do that now. Got to keep on keeping on. So, you know, it is what it is. And I do put my best effort. I don't want y'all to ever think I'm just phoning it in. I never phone it in. So if you listen to a show and be like, you weren't on your top game this week, it isn't for lack of desire or lack of trying. I never phone it in. I will tell you that. I read a lot of different sources when it comes to different topics and things going on in the world. And I do. I listen to all kinds or rather I read all kinds of material from people with all kinds of different perspectives. And of course, obviously, some of it I agree with, some of it I don't agree with. I don't understand the idea of only listening to people that 100% agree with you, you know? It's like I'll read something and somebody say, oh, well, he said this one thing. You know, it's like, well, yeah, I disagree with that. Like, but that means I have to disqualify and not listen to anything else this person has said. Which is just silly. My worldview is not that fragile to where I can't read people that, you know, don't agree with me 100% of the time. I don't demand 100% agreement and conformity. We got to learn. And you can learn and expand your view on the world by hearing people that don't agree with you. I was thinking the other day, you know, about libertarianism. And I come back to libertarianism sometimes because it is, and in full disclosure, you know, there's a time in my life I would be, you know, somebody say, well, how would you describe your political views? And they would be more libertarian. There's nothing wrong with libertarian as long as it's a transitional stage for you. Like if you sit there and tell me, like, I'm a libertarian, I've been a libertarian for 30 years. You grow up, because it is. It's a transitional philosophy. It's fine to be a libertarian, but it should be transitional because you got to be dealing with reality. Libertarianism is like one of the most childish political views, in my opinion, that a person can have. It also, it reeks of intellectualism. And what I mean by that is, It's a political philosophy that like intellectuals, academics some academics like to have because they can sit around and masturbate over it over and over again, you know, or, you know, theorize and in a hypothetical, this is the way it would work in a libertarian society. And they have to do that because it's completely detached from reality. If you look at like lawless, or you see all these news clips of these American cities and you have these homeless people sprawled out, you know, because libertarians sit there and say there shouldn't be any drug laws because you're not harming anybody. You know, they basically say there shouldn't be any government. The problem, all problems are from government. Instead of basically most problems are actually from liberalism. But see, the culprit is government. And yet you can point to these inner cities where people are laying around, strung out on the street, living in a tent, you know, looking like zombies, doing drugs, crapping on the sidewalk. Well, they're not, you know, infringing on you. It's a libertarian utopia. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. It's one of those political philosophies that, like, it doesn't hold up under any sort of actual scrutiny. The libertarian will tell you that, you know, as long as you respect, everybody respects each other's, you know, personal property. Like everything is transactional. It's about your personal property. As long as nobody infringes on your personal property and your rights, then we can just have this government-free libertarian utopia. You know, political philosophies are gibberish when they involve some sort of, you know, ultimate utopia. Libertarianism requires the complete disregard for human nature. The libertarian will tell you that you don't need police. You know, everybody would just like band together as a community and make sure you don't infringe on each other's personal rights, personal property, or whatever. Of course, human nature being what it is, because if you ask the libertarian, be like, well, what happens if they do? Because somebody's going to decide to take your shit, you know? Somebody's going to decide that they're just going to take your stuff. Well, then, you know, and if there's four or five of them, they're going to take your stuff. Well, you see, the other people in your community, you would band together and you would prevent them from doing that. That's called the police. You know, that you just advocated the police. That's what you call the police. And who's going to lead this group? Who's going to organize it? There has to be some form of organization. It's silly. Silly. Somebody's going to decide to take your stuff. It's a childish philosophy. And again, it's fine as long as it's transitional. You know, the problem isn't government per se. The problem is liberalism. The problem is leftism. The problem is this system that we live under. Libertarianism is like saying there's really no problem with the democracy system we live under. We just need more of it. We just need more hyper-individualism, you see? That's the problem. We need more democracy applied harder. instead of looking at history and going, well, you know, actually the system everybody wants and the system that is, you know, on average worked out better for the people over the centuries, over the history of mankind, is some form of monarchy. Now they call a king a dictator because it sounds more sinister and evil. But really, the history of the world is one, you know, the most successful system. I'm not saying it's perfect. If you have to base everything on it's got to be perfect, but what happens if? Well, yeah, there's nothing perfect. But on average, monarchy works out a whole lot better than this supposed democracy system. Our democracy of values of who we are in a rules-based order type of gibberish that we live under now. But they want to apply even more of what isn't working and pretended like that's going to lead to some sort of utopia. They want the drive, the human drive for monarchy. You can see it here in America every 4 years when the presidential election comes around. You know, I mean, technically, the president's just supposed to be kind of an administrative figure, you know, just kind of administrate things. You know, if you went by the supposed structure of the government, which obviously doesn't resemble that now. But everybody treats the presidential election like he's the king, you know, everything, you know, the economy's not doing well. This isn't happening. You know, I don't know. My wife left me and my dog died. It's the president's fault. And the people act like they're voting for a king. If you want a king, why don't we have some sort of monarchy system? Then quit diddling around with this stupid democracy system. I don't know. Libertarianism. I mean, again, and libertarianism is a first step. It should be a first step. It definitely shouldn't be your last step. But it's kind of a first step of recognizing the problems with this system that we live under, you know? But again, it never holds up under any actual scrutiny. And you'll find that when it comes to academics who propose libertarianism, it all just winds up being, you know, theorizing and theoretically and, you know, in other words, there's no actual real world application to it. Again, the libertarian will tell you, you know, well, as long as someone's not encroaching on your rights and your property, then why do you care what they do? And again, if you walk down some street and sidewalk and there's a bunch of zombie drug people laying around out there, they're not encroaching. It's not your property. You know, but who wants to live in a society like that? That's just ridiculous. And then, of course, you get into the gray areas, you know. I mean, you have this situation where people will say, you know, say, for instance, your neighbor got some kind of hot rod and is really loud. And your neighbor goes to work every morning at 5 o'clock in the morning. He fires that mother up while you're sleeping. Well, he's not encroaching on your property. And then you have people say, well, you're right to have your loud exhaust ends at my ears. I don't have to hear it. But he's technically not encroaching on your private property. So who's in the right here, Mr. Libertarian? And ultimately, who's going to be the one to decide they are in the right? Because your neighbor's going to say, well, I'm not encroaching on your private property, so it's none of your damn business. And you're going to be like, well, you're encroaching on my right to sleep at 5 o'clock in the morning and not hear your rumbling ass going by. Well, who's going to be the ultimate arbitrator of that? And the libertarian has no answer. This is why it should just be a transitionary philosophy, the first step to recognizing that the inherent problems under this old, very, very corrupt system that we live under. But again, you should be questioning your views and your worldviews. And because under any scrutiny, libertarianism starts falling apart very quickly. Again, if you've been, I've been a libertarian for a year and a half, well, that's fine. As long as you're willing to challenge your own views, you're going to come to some other point of view. But if you've been a libertarian for 30 years, I don't know, man. You get with the times. You need to start challenging those views. It's just political masturbation. You're just sitting around going, oh, yes, but see, theoretically, what could happen? What kind of society do you want to live in? What happens when people don't respect your private property? Again, they say, well, you have to form up a group to stop them. You're officially saying you've got to make a police force. You could call your group a different name, but what you're saying is you're going to form a police force to stop them. who's going to organize that, who's going to lead it. And you basically you're back to some sort of government system. Just maybe you don't give it a name. It doesn't hold up to any real world scrutiny. It's just silly. And I read libertarians because they do make some good points sometimes. But again, it's like this. It's like they recognize there's a problem with the system we live under, but they're trying to invent something new. The answer is something that really we haven't ever done before. Instead of just saying, well, monarchy actually works out a lot better. Libertarianism, instead of saying, these Enlightenment ideas were a lie and a trick and we need to reject them, they just say we need to do them harder. We need to take individualism and these ideas of the Enlightenment and we just need to put them on steroids and do them harder, instead of saying, well, this hasn't worked out. It was a trick. We got tricked. The libertarian will rightfully point to overtaxation from the government and how the government basically decrees that you don't have private property. And we say, well, you own your home, but if you don't pay that property tax, you ain't going to own your home for long. And they rightfully point, they rightfully point to these things, but there's a problem with the system that we live under. It's silly to go to this other extreme of we should have no government at all, as if, there's this hard either or choice. You either live under this oppressive regime or no government at all. That's not an answer. Come on now. I get worn out with ideology. I really do. With people that have to form, like, you're going to come up with some political philosophy ideology and it's going to literally have every single answer to every single problem that's going to crop up. That's simplistic. That's not the way life works. Again, historically speaking, monarchies tend to work out better because ultimately you're going to have, you're going to have somebody in authority and those who work around them, and they're going to look at each problem and they're going to say, how can we fix this problem? How can we address this issue, this problem? I'm not saying it's perfect. Again, people say, oh, yeah, well, what about? No, there is no perfect answer. That's how people get sucked into ideologies. He's like, if we set up this system, it would have literally the answer to every single thing. Well, no, it's not. There's nothing going to fit in that box every single time. Funnily, oh my goodness, I'm not on my top game today. Funny enough, if you look at the way originally some of the stuff was set up here in the U.S., the reason we have a jury trial originally, the reason they came up with the idea of you would have a jury of your peers is because they said, well, there's going to be times that laws are passed, but there's no way to write a law that's going to account for every single circumstance. You put a law against this thing, this certain thing, but there's no way you can write a law to account for the fact that, oh, well, there's this mitigating circumstance. And under this circumstances, yeah, the law shouldn't be applied here because, these other things were going on. There was actual reason that person did that. And the idea is you would go before your jury and jury look at it and scratch their head and say, well, yeah, technically that's against the law, but I mean, obviously they didn't write the law to apply to this, so we're going to let this guy off. Of course, they don't do that now. We're so far from that now. Now, I don't even know why they bother having jury trials, because the judge just tells the jury, you have to apply the law whether you agree with it or not. Again, the other side of that, they came up with the jury system because if the government just passed a law that the people didn't want, the jury could just refuse to enforce it and it would nullify the law. But again, we don't have that now. Judges tell the jury, you have to apply the law whether you agree with it or not. And people are sheep and they'll sit there and go, well, I got to do what the judge says. Then why the hell are you even there? The judge can just do it. The judge can just apply the law. Why are you there? And nobody asks these questions. Nobody asks these questions. I mean, it made sense. They came up with the jury system because they recognized that there's no way, to write a law or to have a system set up that is perfect. The idea was, well, you'd have a jury here and the jury could weigh things and the circumstances and decide, should this guy be punished for this or not? And now we just have kangaroo courts. Now we just have this system where just you have to apply it. And people have this ideological mindset where this is my political ideology. If it fits in that box, I accept it. And it's got the answers to everything. You're these conservative types, or and this is where libertarianism has leached in to you know, libertarians and conservatives have kind of, I don't know, merged together in a lot of ways. And you'll hear these conservatives and they'll talk about how the free market is the answer to everything. That solved. The market solves that. The free market solves that. Except, you know, A, we don't have a free market, period. And B, no, they're not every single thing is going to be solved by the free market. Anytime you hear somebody say, this solves every answer. This thing, in this case, the free market, this solves the answer to every question you're ever going to have. It's bullshit. Nothing. No, it's not going to solve. It's not going to have the answer to every single thing. It's just silly and stupid. Anybody with any kind of thinking mind, somebody says, look, this, the free market will solve every single question you're ever going to have, and society can be solved by the free market. But bullshit. That's a bullshit. It's not to say the free market doesn't have, you know, a free market rather, doesn't have a role and a place in society. But then you get into the fact that this society we live in does not have a free market. And they don't even grasp that. You'll wind up with these people, you know, arguing, you know, in defense of corporations as if that's the free market. Corporations are basically a creation of the government. They wouldn't exist as corporations except the government created the structure for them to exist under. That's not the free market. And you'll have these conservative libertarian types and they're talking about defending corporations. Well, that a corporation has the right for... Come on now. I saw a story the other day, and I think it was from Europe, but They were talking about the need to continue immigration because, of course, it's always the same answer no matter the question. It's always the same answer. We need more immigration. Like, these economies are dropping. The economies in the West are failing like mad. And they keep saying, well, we need more immigration. In this context, the politician was saying we need more immigration because of our birth rates. You know, they go back to that. We our current birth rates aren't keeping up, so we got to import more people. They point this out. The West pressures Japan continuously because their birth rate is abysmal, because they live under this workaholic, ridiculous system. People there are slaves to the corporatocracy. They're slave to the corporations, and they work these ridiculous hours, and they're constantly exhausted. They don't have time to have kids, so they have a horrible, abysmal birth rate. And, of course, instead of addressing that, the West sits there and pressures them, say, well, you need immigration to replace the people that you're not replacing with birth rate. This politician, I think this was in Europe, again, I don't have the story in front of me, but it struck me at the time because he said, well, he pointed to the low birth rate and said, this is why we've got to import more people for the labor force, as if they're importing the best and brightest, you know, these, as if people are interchangeable. But I was thinking about this in the context of different political philosophies. You hear the term fascism thrown around a lot. Usually it aimed at people like us. You're a fascist. You're a Nazi. And the people that throw these terms around actually don't understand any sort of meaning. You know, they act like these terms are interchangeable because at the end of the day, it's just name calling. They're calling you a, you know, if they were in the second grade, they'd call you a stupid poo-poo head. But since they're allegedly adults, they call you fascist, Nazi, or whatever. They have no idea what the actual historical political philosophies entailed. You know, putting it into simplistic terms, you know, putting it into simplistic terms under National Socialism, what these people call Nazi. Under National Socialism, the idea was the people make the nation. The people make the nation. The state is like it was described as the people are the wine. The state is the bottle that the wine goes into. The state is there for the people to maintain the nation, and the nation is the people. Under actual fascism, like, say, more of a Mussolini type of philosophy, under actual fascism, the state is the nation. And the people exist to support the state because the state is the nation. And what we have presented now in much of the West is the corporation is the nation. You see, the people are irrelevant. The people exist to support the corporation. If the corporation allegedly needs more workers, and obviously there's an argument to be made that they don't actually need more workers, but we don't want to get off into those weeds today. But the allegation, the point being presented is that we have to import these people so that the corporation, so that we can keep our GDP up, so we can keep the national GDP up. The people exist for the corporations. We got to keep those numbers up. Our gross domestic product numbers have got to get, the corporate profits have got to stay up. So in this sense, you have like a corporate fascism. And again, I don't say that under like name calling. I'm trying to explain this in a way, you know, to where we're talking about things that have actual meaning. Under fascism, if the state is the nation and the people exist to support the state, then under this current system, what they're saying is the corporations, the gross domestic product, is the nation. And the people are irrelevant. What matters is supporting the corporate, the GDP, the corporation. What matters is supporting the system. It doesn't matter. The people are interchangeable. So if the domestic people aren't producing enough, then we'll just bring in some other people because they're irrelevant. The people themselves are irrelevant. What matters is supporting the gross domestic product, supporting corporate profits. Now, of course, obviously it gets deeper into that. They're intentionally replacing the people in white countries, and you can get into that. But just taking their arguments on face value and applying them to our known definition of systems such as National Socialism or fascism, which are actually two very different systems, that it's a form by those definitions of like a corporate fascism. And yet they've renamed this our democracy. It's our democracy system where the people are irrelevant. You can interchange the people as long as we support corporate profits, as long as the corporations are doing well, as long as we can point to GDP numbers. And, you know, the people are relevant. That's the argument they're making. Now, obviously, that argument doesn't hold water. Because the GDP numbers, if they were being calculated honestly, are obviously negative already. These people they're incorporating in are mostly coming in and living on welfare. They're mostly drawing out of the system. And it's obviously they're working towards, it's only happening in white countries. Well, I say that. They want to apply it to Japan as well. But without getting off into that, I mean, obviously they are, this is a part of, but just what they're saying is, what they're proclaiming is a form of corporate fascism. Just, they don't call it that. They call it our democracy or whatever. They talk about our values and they never tell us what these values are. Just like they talk about the rules-based order and nobody will tell anybody what these supposed rules are because they're constantly in flux. And it made me, because I read a lot of international news, obviously global, you know, international politics, geopolitics. And it's funny when you see this overlap of the way they deal with other countries, you know, internationally, and the way they deal with us domestically. You know, they deal with countries like Russia and China, and they'll gibberish on, you know, ramble on about the international rules-based order, and yet there are no rules. The rules are what they say they are. They're constantly in flux. And they do that to us domestically, you know? They do. They do that to us domestically. They never tell us what the rules are. They tell us on the one hand that we have free speech, but on the other hand, people are constantly being punished for their supposed free speech. The rules are what they say they are. You know, I did a story here this past Friday. It was yesterday's, I believe, on the Daily Nationalist, talking about, you know, some judge overturning, you know, the Texas law against having child drag shows, because that's in violation of the First Amendment. And yet Texas also passed a law against vaguely defined anti-Semitism, and that's not a problem with free speech. See, the rules are constantly in flux, and nobody knows what the rules are because the rules are whatever the left says they are today. And they deal with that domestically and internationally. That's the pattern as far as there is one. It is funny to watch them make this argument that they got to bring these people in. You know, and that argument changes. You know, sometimes they're saying, well, they're just here temporary because they're fleeing the brutal civil war in Syria. And you're like, well, these people are from Africa. They didn't come from Syria. Then they change the argument. See, it's always in flux. They change the argument to, well, we got to have these people to replace so we can keep the gross domestic product up. Only you look at these people. You know, you look at the pictures of these people, they're obviously not here. They're not here. They're to contribute to society. You know, they're not bringing in, they're not bringing in the best and brightest. I don't know, man. It's crazy. If I was running one of these countries that these people are flooding, you know, from into Europe or into the U.S., I would totally open up my prisons and just send these people. I mean, that's what I would do. I mean, why would you sit here and support, have to spend money to keep people in prison when the West is open for business? You just dump your trash off into these countries and you don't have to deal with it anymore. Just make sure they don't come back. Now, if I can come up with that idea, you're going to tell me these other countries aren't doing that same thing already. They're dumping their garbage off into here. I'm saying every one of these people is a criminal, but you can't tell me that's not happening because that's just common sense. That's what I would, like I say, if that's what I would do. If I was king of some third world shithole, I would be like, why am I paying to keep people in prison? We can just put them on a train and ship them to the border. Ship them right across. I don't have to deal with it anymore. Just make sure they don't come back. They're not coming back. They're going to be there forever. I don't know. You know, everything in the West, I was alive, obviously. I'm a Gen Xer. I was alive when the Soviet Union came apart. And I remember right after that happened, a lot of political philosophers and people, academics, you know, one of the things that was said at the time was that the collapse of the Soviet, one of the things that brought the collapse of the Soviet Union about was, you know, the contradictions. You know, there was the contradictions that were inherent in communism. Those contradictions ultimately led to the downfall of the Soviet Union. Now, I don't want to get off into, well, the truth of that, but we'll take it at face value, because if you take that at face value and you look at this today, what we're talking about today, when your rules and your rules-based order are constantly in flux, when, you know, the rules for your domestic population are constantly, when you make the rules for your domestic population constantly whatever you say they are at the time, you are making contradictions. You know, you can't do that without contradicting yourself. And you see it all the time. I just laid it out. You have free speech in America. They tell you constantly you have free speech, and yet you're punished for your speech in one form or another if you say the wrong thing, instead of just saying, well, you're not allowed to say that. I don't know what happened to all those people that used to say communism, you know, and the Soviet Union collapsed because of the contradictions. You know, because we live in just everything in our democracy value of who we are. So it's just one big contradiction. The rules are, it has to be, because the rules are constantly in flux. You can't tell people you have the right to free speech and then turn around and punish them for speech that you don't like. And yet that's what we have. No, that's what we have. Those are contradictions. And those just keep piling up one on top of the other. Like I say, and they do it internationally. They spout about the rules-based order, and they won't tell anybody what the rules are, because the rules are what they say they are at the time. The rules are just simply what benefits them at the time. But everything in this country now is so simplified, boiled down to just some form of marketing slogan. I saw a deal. I read a story just for doing this show, and it was talking about some group, you know, some group is suing to keep Trump off the ballot. Trump can't get on the ballot. And this group of lawyers, see, they're just independent. They just want voting rights for everybody. And because they want voting rights for everybody, they want to keep Trump off the ballot. And I looked into this group. I went to their website. And you know, when you get to the about section where they just tell you about that, there's a big long write-up about what they're about. And I lost count. I literally lost count about how many times in this write-up they used the term our democracy. That's a marketing term. The idea that all of these people have come out and just purely just on their own started using the exact same marketing term over and over again. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, they didn't just naturally, everybody started using the term our democracy. I literally lost count of how many times they used the term our democracy. You see, all these politicians, our democracy. They come out and talk about our democracy. And again, nobody can tell you exactly what that means. It has no meaning. It's whatever they say it means at this time. If Trump beat Hillary in 2016 when she was supposed to win, that's a threat to our democracy. The Russians were threatening our democracy. Hillary Clinton has not stopped whining about losing in 2016, that she didn't really lose. It was the Russians threatening our democracy. When you have all this obvious voter fraud in the 2020 election and Trump says, I think there's voter fraud, Trump is a threat to our democracy by questioning the sanctity of our holy elections. You see, it changes all the time. And in so doing, there is a built-in contradiction in everything. And they just keep piling up one on top of the other. And these people just keep ignoring that. They just keep ignoring that and keep repeating the marketing slogans. They don't care that they're contradictory. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that the collapse of Soviet communism, you know, came down to contradictions built into the idea of communism. I'm sure there's more factored into it than simply that. It's always more complicated than that. But at the same time, we're quickly going to find out how much truth there is to that. Because this society, our democracy that we live in, our democracy is nothing but contradictions. So before it's all over, we're going to find out how true that is. We're going to find out how much contradictions any system can stand up to, because this system is nothing but contradictions. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on the first part of the show. On that note, we got to get into the Christian specific segment this week. So let's go ahead and do that. Y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. I kind of wish I had a listener supporter mailbag question to start this segment off. I really don't. I don't really do show notes. Y'all know that. It's pretty obvious a lot of times, and for better or for worse. And, you know, but I do jot things down. You know, I spend time every day. I attempt to spend time every day in prayer and reading the Bible. And I'll often jot things down to discuss with y'all. And then I had some things jotted down, which I've just tossed to the side now, because if I'm being completely honest, every attempt I've made to discuss these things have kind of turned into me just rambling endlessly, and I just stop. Stop myself. Let's just start all over. Or I wind up just basically redoing a show from the past and redoing the same thing. It's hard. It's hard some weeks. So I've thrown that aside. And we're just going to talk about whatever for however long, and it'll be what it'll be. I saw a video the other day. This I did want to talk about. This is from my notes. I guess I'm completely tossed everything away. I saw a video the other day popped up in my recommendations, and I don't know why, but it did. And it was one of those videos where some guy was talking about his near-death experience. You know, he died on the operating table or some shit, and he had a near-death experience, and he allegedly did, and he was explaining this near-death experience. And I find those things interesting because sometimes they seem pretty grounded, and you're like, wow, that's kind of neat. And then sometimes, like this instance, it's just so reflective of how people wind up inventing like things from scratch. You know, this guy claimed in his near-death experience, he went into this great hall. He found himself in this great hall, and it was explained to him that this was the afterlife. In this great hall that he was in is the orientation center, you know, and you have counselors here. I chuckle. You know, see, I can watch these things. See, a lot of people, you know, when it comes to their belief, whether it's political beliefs or religious beliefs or whatever, you know, they're afraid that like anything that runs counter to their beliefs, that they're afraid to take that in like at all. And they're just like, no, I can't listen to this. See, I can listen to something like this and sit here and chuckle. Because you think of all the people, the saints and the philosophers and men and monks who isolated themselves in monasteries and spent their entire life studying these questions, these spiritual questions, these questioning, you know, our purpose and why we're here and these conundrums and these things that God has given us, these challenges God has given us. And then, you know, I had this revelation. I saw the afterlife, and it was basically a government bureaucracy, an orientation center. And they had counselors and everything. It was great. I just have to laugh. Like wow. So, you know, some monk that lived in the 1500s in a holed up in a monastery, he just didn't understand that there were counseling centers, orientation centers with counselors. This is an invention of the mind of modern man. Another part this guy said is it was revealed to him that before you're born, you sit down and you write your entire life out, how your life is going to go, whether you're going to go to college or not, and what kind of job you're going to have, and who your spouse is. You write all of that out, you see. And then when you're born, you live it out. You live out what you planned for your life. Of course, this leaves open the question, what if you have a really shitty life? It's your fault. You planned it out. So you're just living out the life. Who would plan out a miserable life? If that were the case, everybody would have a great life, right? You know, everybody would be living on easy street. And it's easy to just laugh at this sort of silliness. But I was thinking about how it is reflective of how embedded Marxism is. Wow, where did you make that jump, Dan? Well, let me explain. You know, in Marxism, there's this whole, you know, zero history. Today is day zero. There is no history before us. So everything starts from today. Also, the Marxist idea of a new man. And this is so embedded and reflected that people start trying to invent spiritual answers from nothing. You know, people have these basic questions. And they're right there in the Bible. They're answered, and they act like they've got to start off from zero. You know, day zero of history, the new man. I've got to figure it all out from here. Imagine if we addressed engineering the way so many people in this world now address spirituality. Like, you're going to design a big walkway bridge to go over this river so people can walk to the other side. And, you know, it's going to have this big arching bridge. I picture this big rock bridge, you know. And you started off from zero. Like, you had to invent pi. You spend your whole life trying to invent pi when it already exists. You know, engineering is just taking the things other people from thousands of years of history have come up with and applying them to your project today. Be like trying to say you're going to invent a new car. Like, you worked for Ford and they said, hey, you're going to invent the new whatever, the new Mustang or something. And okay, your boss assigns this to you, and he comes back like 6 months later and he's like, how's that project coming along? I haven't gotten an update. And he looks over there to see, and you're trying to invent the wheel. Be like, what the hell are you doing? You've got to reinvent the wheel. That's already been done. Engineering, we know how to build archways that aren't going to collapse. We know about the stone, the keystone in the center. We know about all of that. You don't have to reinvent that. You don't have to come up with pi. That already exists. Use pi. I'm not an engineer. I can't even tell you how to use pi, but you can use it. You're going to use pi because somebody else already came up with it. If it was up to you to figure it out, you ain't never going to get anywhere. But see, work on these things that came before. And yet, when it comes to spirituality, people... at least people here in America, a lot of them, they try to reinvent some new thing. Like, they act like there's nothing that came before. They're going to invent something brand new. They're going to come up with some brand new answer all their own that nobody over thousands of years of history came up with, because they're so unique and so special. They themselves are going to find the key. They're going to find the key to unlock the door to all of the answers of the world around us. It's just, it's silly. I mean, it reflects, though, how that zero history Marxist mentality, how ingrained it is in people. And of course, the MCC, so many of these Christian churches, they don't have a clue either. I'm not trying to be arrogant, but I mean, they're wandering around like without a clue. If somebody asks them a basic question, They can't give the answer. Why does this sort of evil exist in the world? And they're going to get an answer about, well, you know, we all God's children, and they don't, you know, they can't explain it. Basic stuff. We do this show here, and I'm always flattered when I hear from some of y'all that say, you know, wow, I heard, you know, you talked about this and explained this, and it really was a blessing for me. And I'm always flattered by that. I really am. And hearing that from y'all is a blessing for me. But what we cover here, we cover pretty basic stuff. You know, I mean, we do. We cover basic stuff because I believe that God in his infinite wisdom made this as simple for us as he could. You know, I think we cover a lot of it, but you see, so many churches don't even do that anymore. They don't even have the answer to basic stuff. I don't know. The whole society is structured. I was thinking about how the whole society is just structured to keep people from reaching their spiritual potential, you know, and that's an efficient way to go about it. Instead of like trying to, you know, thwart and confuse each individual, you get a whole society structured around confusion. You know, people wandering around confused, don't know the answer. Redefine words don't mean anything, you know. Love, for instance, you hear all these churches, they talk about God is love and whatnot. And in our society, by and large today, they have redefined love to mean lust. If you really think about it, they've redefined love to mean lust. And virtually any song you listen to that be talking about love, they mean lust. I'm going to love you all night long, baby. You know, love equals lust. People talk about, you know, well, I felt like we were going out, we got married, but you see, we just grew distant. We fell out of love. No, they fell out of lust. The that fire of lust burns down after a while. They fell out of lust. They've redefined love to mean lust. And they wind up, because they have done this. Love, people don't even know what love means anymore. That's how you get to this promotion of homosexuality. They say love is love. Well, what they mean is lust is lust. If love has been redefined as lust, then yeah, whatever you lust after is a-okay, right? Love is love. If people want to love each other whatever way they want to, but that's not love, that's lust. See, they've changed the definition of what the word means, and people think they're pursuing something biblical when they're actually going the other direction. If you consider the great blasphemy that is being spoken, if you as a society have redefined love to meaning lust, or redefined lust to being the word love, and then you go around and say God is love, then what are you saying? You're saying your God is your own lust. And in this, the people wind up speaking a blasphemy without even realizing they're doing it. And these sort of messages are society-wide. Do you know? You build this, you wind up with this confusing society, and everybody's just wandering around, just completely lost. It's an efficient way to thwart people from reaching their potential. Just have the whole society structure to keep them from doing that, where you can't even understand basic concepts like love and what that means. I was just thinking about that video, though. And I mean, just like, imagine you spend your whole life I've spent my whole life, you know, seeking the Lord and seeking to understand his truth and to grow closer to him. And then finally, this life is over. And I was thinking, You leave this world, you go to the other side, you go to the eternal realm. And I find some kind of bureaucratic counseling center with government counselors, bureaucratic orientation center with government counselors. I'm going to be like, Lord, far be it from me to question you, but what is this exactly? Why am I dealing with the bureaucracy? I'm waiting for my counselor and I got to take a number. Here in the orientation center. What am I being oriented to? I thought my whole life was orienting and getting ready. And now I got to go through this. What is this? I got to go talk to some bureaucrat somewhere. Some government employee on the other side. forbid for me to catch. Lord, I'm kind of disappointed. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit disappointed that this is it. It's just gibberish. It's just gibberish that people invent. It's interesting because it does demonstrate, though, that no matter how much people have been led astray and how much people will outright reject the Lord, they do demonstrate that they have a spiritual need. A lot of people do. You know, there's people that are just children of the devil, and they're just evil, and they're just reaching their own inverted. Just as we as Christian believers, when we seek the Lord our entire lives, they have the inversion of that. They seek their father their entire lives, which is the devil. So they spend their entire lives just embracing wickedness and evil to ultimately reach their father in hell. But it does demonstrate, it is interesting because, like, as bad as it is, people will still demonstrate that inherent drive for something spiritual, you know, their own spirituality. They, even if it winds up showing up as some sort of weird gibberish because they're trying to reinvent the wheel because things are different now. This does demonstrate, though, that people have a basic drive, a basic need. You know, spiritual need, a need for spirituality. They're trying to see, there's something driving them, you know, to reach for something more. They just don't know what that is. They don't understand what that means. And again, the Marxist mindset is so ingrained in the society now that they think they have to start from zero, history zero. They're starting from scratch. They got to reinvent the wheel. Nothing came before today. They got to create this new spiritual man out of nothingness. I don't know. Like I say, people have a natural, inborn spiritual, you know, drive, a desire, and that's demonstrated. It's a shame because, you know, you go through a town. I mean, you can find all these Christian churches with crosses on top, and you think, well, people ought to be able to find the answer there. The fact that people are inventing all of this new kind of gibberish tells you that they're not finding the answers there. And when you peek inside of your average MCC, you can see why they're not finding the answer, because there are no answers there. They can't even explain basic things, you know? They go and say, well, I read this story about this really, really evil, wicked person that was doing horrible things to other people and animals or whatever. You know, explain that to me, and they'll get some kind of vague mumbling about we're all God's children or something. There are no answers there. They can't find any answers at the church, so they start inventing new gibberish. It's just a shame. It's just a shame because people have a spiritual drive and they're not being given the answers. They're not finding the answers. And this ultimately is a reflection of the failure of the churches today, the church. You know, they're not giving them the answers because the answers are here. You know, the answers are have been spelled out. You know, obviously, I'm not talking about every single church, but I'm saying, you know, by and large, you look across when people refer or talk down about Christianity, they're talking about the MCC. And it's a failure because they're not giving, if they were giving people the answers, then they wouldn't keep looking and finding this need to make up a bunch of gibberish. People could answer, well, there's evil people in this world. Let me tell you what, let me explain this evil and wicked person, why that is happening. Because, you know, and you tell them the parable of the weeds and the wheat, you know, the wheat and the tares. See, there's people in this world that are just simply of the devil, and they're going to work towards their father, the devil. They hate all that is good. They hate anything that reminds them of the Lord. When they look at the innocence in the eyes of a child, they want to tear that down in any way they can. You know, when they see a dog that, even though they're ugly to it, it wags its tail and tries to be friendly, they want to torture it because it reminds them on a basic level of God's grace and mercy, and they hate it and they want to torture it and they want to kill. They're working towards they're reflective of their father, the devil. They are spiritually of their father, the devil. They're not God's children. There's people among you in this world that are not God's children. They're the devil, and they're just constantly working towards hell. Are you going to get that explanation in any MCC? No, you're going to get some gibberish about we're all God's children and it's God's will. And again, these are basic things, and the church fails, the MCC fails to give people these answers to these simple basic questions. Of course, people just wind up wandering off and saying, well, I guess I'll have to figure it out, you know, figure out some new answer, because obviously these guys don't have it. Somebody has a great tragedy in their life, and they're trying to overcome this loss. A loved one died or something, and they go to the local church and they ask the preacher to explain this, and then it's like, well, your child being run over by that car, that was God's will, and you don't understand how God's will works. They can't even explain the basic concept of free will. This is the price you pay for having free will. Why do these bad things happen? Because to not happen, you wouldn't have free will. See, people by and large, they want free will, but they don't want consequences for free will. Because if you got free will, you always get into that, you know, well, explain to me why God allows bad things to happen in this life, because God has given you free will. And if you have free will, that means everybody else has free will. And if everybody else has free will, then guess what? Sometimes bad things are going to happen because of the choices other people make. It's not God had this grand plan to have your loving your 5-year-old child that you cherish be run over by a car because somebody was looking at their phone and not paying attention or some crap. That wasn't God's will. That was just people exercising their free will. But again, to say, well, God should have prevented that. Well, the way to prevent that then is you don't want them to have free will. It's an all or nothing. If you're going to have free will, everybody else gets it too. And if everybody else gets it too, guess what? People are going to make dumb decisions or selfish decisions that are going to negatively impact you. That's just how it is. You know, Jesus didn't show up and look at his plan one day and say, I want your 5-year-old to get run over by a car. That's silly. I hear people, you know, try to cope, you know, and they say, well, Jesus took him. You know, you hear stories of parents, you know, doing really dumb things, you know. And then afterwards, you know, they say, but Jesus took my baby. Well, no. You just made some really dumb choices and put your child in a bad position and they died as a result. They don't want to hear that. It's easier to cope and say Jesus took them. You free will, you own that. You make your decisions, and some of them are really bad decisions, and sometimes really bad things happen, and other people have free will. It's that simple. But you're not going to hear that. Somebody going to the church would be like, man, my 5-year-old got run over playing on her bicycle. Some guy run up on the sidewalk and killed her. Explain this to me, preacher. Well, Jesus just took her and it was all a part of God's will. How are you going to say God's will is your child get run over? Explain. This is the price for free will, and other people making bad choices, they have free will. It's all or nothing. You always come back to people want to have free will, but they want to have freedom of consequences. They want to be able to write that off and blame God if they make a bad choice. Or they want a situation where they have free will and they're making their own choices, but they don't want everybody else having free will. This should just be for me. But that's not the way the system works. These are basic things. And the churches can't even explain this. The MCC can't explain this. They just start rambling a bunch of gibberish about God's will and God's love and whatnot. And they're not giving any real answers. People realize on a basic level when somebody just rattles, you can tell when somebody's bullshitting you, you know, and they realize this guy don't know what he's talking about. And so they wander off and you wind up with this situation where people just inventing from nothingness. He's just coming up with a government bureaucracy heaven or something, you know, starting off from zero. And you wind up with all this spiritual gibberish. Because nobody's giving them the answers. It's a failure of church leadership. It's the world we live in. It's just a shame, because again, you see where people have like a need, a spiritual need, and obviously those needs aren't being met, and that's a failure of the church. I mean, it just is. Now, again, I'm not saying every single church, but I mean, by and large, what you look at in America or the West today and say is Christianity. When people point and say Christianity, it's a failure. It is. It's a failure of man. It's not a failure of God. But, I mean, it is a failure. You know, the churches had to be subverted for a reason, and they're subverted. It's just the way it is. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. I'm sorry. I apologize. I know this week's Christian specific segment is probably let down. It just is. It just is. We just, some weeks are easier than others, but hopefully you got something out of it. You know, we look at people and you see that they have a spiritual desire, a spiritual drive, even when it manifests as some sort of gibberish. It says something that people do have that, that tells you something. You know, and you have a soul, you have a spirit that's longing to be closer to God. And it's just a shame that so many people aren't finding the correct way to fulfill that, aren't finding their purpose in life. So anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you did get something out of all the show. I appreciate you joining us this week. Hope you will love. I hope you'll catch the rest of our content here on Radio Albion, Daily Nationalist, and of course, Dr. Johnson's Orthodox Nationalist on Wednesdays. And as always, I hope you'll come back next week and join us here for the Parish of the Patriots.